Prologue. Franz Josef. Every evening, Sergeant Major Gustav Rutenberger carried out an inspection of the castle perimeter, checking the sentries were alert at their posts and hoping to catch one napping. Rutenberger was a stickler for routine, and the last stop on his rounds was always the east side of the building, where a narrow walkway with a sheer drop on one side and the mighty castle wall rising on the other led to a barbed wire gate. Beyond that lay the park and the woods. Guards with machine guns were posted at intervals of 30 feet along the length of the terrace. Two more sentries guarded the gate itself, one patrolling a raised metal catwalk with a clear line of fire down the terrace. Shortly before midnight, on a warm September night in 1943, the Sergeant Major, or Stabsfeldwebel in German, appeared on the terrace as usual, accompanied by two soldiers with slung rifles. The prisoners had been locked into their quarters 2 hours earlier. Kolditz was quiet. Powerful floodlights threw the guards' distorted silhouettes against the granite face of the castle. Rutenberger cut an unmistakable figure. A native of Saxony, he had won the Iron Cross during the First World War and was said to wear his campaign medals in bed. He was feared and admired by the men under his command in No. 3 Platoon of the Guard Company. The prisoners took every opportunity to mock their captors, but treated this bristling martinet with cautious respect, as a soldier from an earlier age, battle-scarred, disciplined, and extravagantly hairy. The most distinctive thing about Rutenberger was his facial plumage, a spectacular moustache and mutton-chop combination. The old soldier was immensely proud of his huge gingery whiskers, brushing, clipping, and waxing them to points as if grooming an exotic pet. The British POWs called him Franz Josef after the Austro-Hungarian emperor with the handlebar moustaches, but never, ever to his face. Rutenberger marched up smartly to the first guard on the terrace and barked, "There is an attempted escape on the west side. Report to the guardhouse immediately." The startled sentry saluted, clicked his heels, and took off. The officer dismissed the second guard, and then the third. The two sentries manning the gate were surprised to see Rutenberger rounding the corner of the terrace with two replacement guards in tow. They were not due to go off duty for another 2 hours. "You're relieved early," snapped the moustachioed sergeant major. "Give me the key." Rutenberger appeared to be particularly irritable tonight, but appearances can be deceptive. A close inspection of Rutenberger's facial hair would have revealed that it was made from dismantled shaving brushes, coloured ginger grey with watercolour paints from the prison shop, and attached with glue. His uniform, like those of his escorts, was stitched with precision out of prison blankets and dyed the correct shade of German field grey. The Iron Cross on his breast was made from zinc, stripped off the castle roof and moulded into shape with a hot kitchen knife. His headgear had been fashioned out of a peaked RAF cap using felt and string. His pistol holder was cardboard, shined up with brown boot polish, from which poked a piece of wood painted to look like the butt of a 9mm Walther P-38 pistol. The two soldiers in greatcoats carried dummy rifles with wooden barrels polished with pencil lead, bolts fashioned from bits of steel bedstead, and tin triggers formed from metal cutlery. The Sergeant Major was a replica Rutenberger, a fake Franz Josef. His name was Michael Sinclair, a 25-year-old British lieutenant who had already escaped twice from Kolditz before being caught and brought back. Sinclair was fluent in German, a talented amateur actor, and an obsessive. He thought only of escaping and talked about nothing else. "I'm getting out of here," he insisted repeatedly. This was not an expression of hope, but a statement of belief. Some of the other prisoners found his single-mindedness off-putting. There was something desperate in Sinclair's determination. For 4 months, he had studied Rotenberger's gait, posture and accent, his routine, his mannerisms, and the way he swore when angry, which was often. High above the terrace, 35 more British officers waited in the darkness. The bars on the windows of the sixth floor had already been sawn through. The men wore handmade civilian clothes. Each carried a counterfeit travel pass, forged using a typewriter of wood and wire. A photograph taken with a camera made from a cigar box and spectacles, and authorised with the official German eagle stamp carved out of a shoe heel using a razor blade. "It's going to work," someone whispered, as the first guard hurried off. "It's really going to work." The plan was simple. With the sentries out of the way, a first group of 20 would climb down the outside of the building on ropes made from knotted bedsheets. Sinclair would unlock the gate to the park, and they would all scramble down the slope into the nearby woods. If they got away, the rest would follow a few minutes later. Once in the trees, they would split into pairs and spread out into the countryside, before making for Germany's borders by a variety of prearranged routes. The Franz Josef plan depended on ingrained German habits of military obedience, preparation, timing, luck, and the credibility of Sinclair's false whiskers. The escapers calculated it would take 4.5 minutes before the dismissed guards reached the guardhouse and found the real Rotenberger, at which point all hell would break loose. Many of the prisoners crouching in the dark had been captives for almost 3 years. During that time, numerous escapes had been attempted, with only a small handful of successes. In the escalating internal war between the guarded and the guards, a major victory beckoned. If it worked, this would be the first mass breakout in Colditz history. The commandant of Colditz had recently issued orders that everyone, without exception, entering or leaving the castle must produce a pass, with a different colour for each day. The sentry at the gate was sticking to the rules. Later he would claim that the moustaches before him did not quite curl properly. In truth, he was merely obeying orders, even though Rotenberger had issued those orders and was now apparently telling him to disobey them. The sentry's voice floated up to the windows above. "Nein, Herr Stabsfeldwebel, nein!" Sinclair cursed him for his insolence. "Are you daft? Don't you know your own sergeant?" But finally he reached into his pocket and handed over an exit pass, or Ausweis, dated, signed and stamped. This was a copy of a real pass obtained from a bribed German guard. It was a perfect duplicate in every respect, except it was the wrong colour. The fake pass was grey. It was supposed to be yellow. The sentry stared at it for a moment and back at Franz Josef Rotenberger. Then he slowly raised his rifle.